You are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California. My name is Lois Richter, and this program is That's Life. Now, today I have another interview, and I have with me, well, a world-renowned...
Whoops.
...enthusiast named Mitchell Hill. And I've met Mitchell through office hours and after hours, and you know... If you listen to my show all the time, you know I've had several interviews with some of the folks from there, and Mitch is another one. Mitchell Hill, good to see you. How are you?
Be prepared to be bored beyond belief. That's my motto.
You're into bees today, huh?
Yes, exactly. Well, it's such a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for bringing me on board. And if I sound like a radio guy, it's because I used to be a radio guy. So
you are a radio guy.
Yeah, it's in your blood.
Once a radio guy, always a radio guy.
It's true, or a gal, whichever case may be. But yes, you're right. It's in your blood, which makes it fun.
It makes it real hard to give transfusions. Think of all the people that you could turn on to being radio guys if you just...
Well, I can only hope that if I got a transfusion, it'd be from somebody that came from a big market.
No, from you to them, to you to other people.
Oh, they don't want me. I've been all over the place. They don't want to deal with me.
Well, let's start out by finding out who you are, where you are, what you're doing briefly. In other words, are you still working? You retired, whatever. So give me the brief bio.
Lois, thank you very much again for asking the question. I like to talk, so that's a good start right there. And that's a prerequisite for being a radio person. I got into the radio business, I would say, officially 1970. So that gives me quite an arc. I was part of what they used to call, or they still call, the golden age of broadcasting. And I'm not sure why they call that. I think it's before automation, before computers and scheduling and homogenizing and all the sound-alike things that happened to broadcasting. Obviously not to this show, but what happens out there on the other part of the dial. So I promise that if you stay here for the next half hour, is that how long we're going to be together?
Oh, no. I have an hour-long show. So unless you give me the sign and I have to stop us, you can stop any time. I can always play music.
I promise to unveil some very interesting facts about me that nobody else on the planet knows.
Really? So, oh, wow.
Yes, yes.
What are they? What are they? What, Mitch? What?
Well, I can't give them out right away. I've got to pre-sell it.
Lean up to it. Yeah.
I pre-sell it, then I get them. We'll be right back after these messages. But there's no messages since you're a non-commercial station. So we will continue. We will soldier on and make it exciting and interesting for your listeners.
And just because we're non-commercial doesn't mean we don't have messages.
Well, you have sponsors.
We have messages. We have messages like public service announcements, like saying the senior center is now open. So if you have any interest in community activities, I suggest you check out the Davis Senior Center, the corner of 7th and A Street. Is that right? 7th and...
You're asking me? I don't know. I can't remember the last thing I said.
Anyway, so that was my PSA for the hour.
Good for you. You're just like Paul Harvey, the way you slipped it in there, because Paul Harvey used to have this ability to go from telling a very interesting story into some new arm cream or something that you could put on. And you never knew you got there. So he was, Paul Harvey, good day. I loved listening to him. You do know who I'm talking about, don't you?
Of course.
Okay, some of your listeners may not. And here's the problem. There's going to be a little bit of a cultural shift here in some of my cultural reference points, because I'm 67 years old and I got into radio in the 70s. So immediately everything's going to skew to the old stuff. There'll be references to my three sons, not actually my three sons, but the
the show.
Yeah, all those shows. And I will do my best to make it entertaining along the way. So I guess one of the questions might be, how did I get into radio? Because that's the question I always ask my friends when I bump into them that used to hold down a air shift somewhere. So I will answer my question, and then you can answer it, your question for me. And mine is, I don't really know. it's like a lot of things in life. You do a lot of different things when you're younger, and some things sort of resonate. And talking into a microphone and trying to entertain people, was a very interesting challenge, and I did it in high school quite a bit, and I just seemed to be pretty good at it. But of course, along the way, you want to make your way to the big things. So, in the old day in radio, which was interesting, we all listened to AM. We barely listened to FM. So it's not that way now, but it's the other way around. We could hear radio stations all over the country, and it was really a neat thing that at night after the sun went down, that you started listening to radio stations all across the nation in big cities, little cities, like, you know, you'd listen to Chicago, WLS, you could hear Fort Wayne, Indiana, WOWO, you could hear across the border into Canada at CKLW. You can actually hear some of the stations in LA. So it was a really neat thing, and it was kind of exciting how you could emulate these people and fake it. So I'm not allowed to say call letters. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No. Just give me a chance to ask some questions when you're in there. It's like,
oh, you're raising your hand.
My turn.
This is radio. She's raising her hand trying to explain why. Why she got into radio. Okay, I'm leaving off.
No, Mitch, I just have questions.
Oh, question. Go ahead.
So you were getting, at night, you were getting signals from distance away, but those signals, they were bouncers, right?
Yes, they bounced off the ionosphere.
So you had places that you could hear, but places closer than that that you couldn't hear. And so it, for people who don't understand what we're talking about, please explain why we in California could be listening to New York, but someone close to New York might not be able to hear it.
Yeah, it's ionospheric bounce, and that's caused by the Earth's ionosphere, which is excited ions. During the day, it's much higher, so you don't reach it. But at night, the ionosphere comes in closer to the Earth and thus provides a better target for signals to go out into space. And then they hit the ionosphere and they bounce off it and come down. So what might happen is that if there was a mountain or something that was between the line of sight, between two points on the Earth, the signal would go up over the mountain, bounce off the ionosphere, and then come back down somewhere on the other side. That's a typical condition.
And one of the things, my husband's a physicist, so I get a little bit of this stuff.
Oh, he would have been that, sure.
And one of the things is the angle of incidence? Is that the phrase I'm looking for?
The angle of reflectance, yes.
So if I'm here, I'll say I'm here in Davis. Where are you sitting right now, Mitch?
I'm sitting in Wilmington, Delaware on the East Coast.
In Delaware. Okay. So if your station in Delaware was broadcasting and the sounds were going straight up, nothing would happen. But if the sounds were going towards the horizon, but not quite flat, then when it hit the ionosphere, it would bounce back down at the same angle and it'd be very far distant to hear you. Is this accurate?
Yes. Yeah, just like skipping a rock on a pond.
Good.
It bounces off that and goes further. Now, it technically would not happen because there are no radio stations powerful enough in Wilmington, Delaware to do that skip. Usually it's these, what they called major clear channel stations that were designed to reach different parts of the United States. They would be 50,000 watt clear channel stations. You probably heard that term before. Mm-hmm. That meant that nobody else was on that frequency at night so that signal could bounce up and not be interfered with at the other end.
And were those...
Well, simplified form of it.
Yeah, that's cool. I think of it in terms of having a mirror on the ceiling. And, you know, depending upon where you are, you can see something looking at the ceiling and going over a chair or something.
Just like staying at the Holiday Inn.
What?
No, just kidding. You're on the ceiling. Come on, it's a reference. It's a radio show, you know. These aren't cufflinks. These are curb feelers. Yes, it bounced. It got there. I heard these stations all over the world, and mm-hmm. I was fascinated. I didn't know what, you know, there was all these personalities, Larry Lujack and mm-hmm. Paul Harvey and...
The Wolfman.
Wolfman Jack, baby! out of XRK, I think it was, in Mexico. All these strange characters. And because radio is the theater of the mind, and, you know, this was when there was only four channels on TV, it just opened my mind and the idea that all these characters lived somewhere out there. They could have been on another planet, for all I know.
Many of them were.
Exactly.
So when you were in doing the radio stuff in high school, do you think that you were more comfortable in front of a mic because it put something between you and people? Or were you one of those outgoing people who were comfortable in real life as well?
You know, it's funny. I've never been asked that question. And here's one of those revelations that I promised I'd tell everybody that nobody else knew about me. I was never comfortable in front of people. I was definitely not comfortable with a microphone and lots of people in the audience. But when I could put this disguise on of an announcer, my name was Bobby Dark, I became a different person. I was sort of shielded from that, and I could do things, and I could act a certain way. Now, remember, I was only about 16 years old when this was going on, so that's a very awkward time in your life. And for a nerd that wore a pocket protector and had a hard time asking girls out, having this persona was an excellent way to sort of break the ice, if you will. So it's interesting you should say that, because even to this day, I'm much better when I'm not wearing my radio hat. I'm much better wearing my radio hat than I am being myself. I am being my kind of myself now because I'm semi-retired, but it really put me on the edge. And some smart professor somewhere along the line told me, always do something every day that scares the heck out of you. So I just did it. I just did it and I did it and I did it. And eventually it sort of worked into a personality that I was comfortable with, borrowing from all these people I'd hear all over the country, listening to Paul Harvey, listening to all the great DJs, Dan Ingram, all those guys here and there and everywhere. I'm not going to remember them all because I'm getting too old. I'm suffering from OLD. But anyhow.
Well, you know, you're remembering a lot more of those names than I ever did. I would hear things, but I wasn't into media at that time. And so it didn't stick with me. I knew WLS because where I grew up in Backwoods, Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula by Canada, that was one of the few things that we could actually hear. And of course, for those of you who don't know, WLS is the world's largest store, and that was Sears.
Yeah, that was right from the Sears Tower. They were broadcasting. And there are a lot of other great radio stations. And forgive me for not remembering all of them. Super Jock, Larry Lujack was on I don't know, their sister station.
Doesn't matter. I'm more interested in what stations you were doing. So when you were 16, was it a local station in your town?
Well, I used to ride my bike around the neighborhood, and we were sort of in a high plain where we were located in Delaware. Delaware doesn't have a lot of mountainous areas, but we were high up. And I'd look across about 3 or 4 miles, and there were these 5 radio towers blinking red. And I was always fascinated by, what is that? You know, like, what are those things? It was many miles away, maybe 10, 15 miles away. And I've always been a bit of a techie and also, you know, a little bit of a ham, if you will. And I guess all of this stuff started coming together for me in high school, doing the plays and being the school announcer, reading the morning gym class will be held 1 hour later today due to an illness and, you know, something, whatever I did.
And you developed your radio voice doing it.
Well, that's the problem. Back then, you had to have a radio voice to be on the radio. Today, it's not the same. But unfortunately, as I developed it, I got stuck with it. So I have a radio voice, and it's from the 70s, and I apologize in advance. I'm going to sound like a radio guy, which has served me well. It served me well in life because in a meeting, if I need to get everybody, hey, that's not going to work. This is what you need to do. It just sort of cut through the I would sort of channel Paul Harvey, and I would get right into the meat of things.
You have a lot of voices because you've been giving me Wolfman Jack and Paul Harvey and everything in their own voice.
Well, kinda. I mean, I can't. How many people can do Paul Harvey? Hello, good day. Or Wolfman Jack. Who I knew. An hour for rest. His thing was a cadence that he used. He used a cadence that was so unique because he would talk in such a way that he would build you right up to the end. And then he would finish it, just like that. A little bit like Julia Child would.
One of the things that is always fascinating is the difference between when you're using somebody else's voice,
right,
even your character, and when you're using your own voice, and the sounds that come out. So when you're talking about, when you're talking in Paul Harvey, you are much louder than when you are talking in Mitch Hill. Even Mitch Hill's radio voice, which is deep and resonous.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, is that good?
Well, I guess. I mean, back then it was. Today it's not really. Conversational voices are what's in. I do voiceover work today. So
good.
I don't want to make it sound like a sales pitch. That's just what I do.
That's cool. So one of the questions on that, why was Deep and Resonous good for radio? And I think it has to do with the sound frequencies, and women on the radio just sounded kind of funny, and they were kind of, and in, even if you were talking in a normal voice. And so what is the physics on that, man?
I guess the physics were like a singer, you know, you had to have a certain quality to your voice in order to have it cut through the, and remember AM radio was all about the sound. If you had the sound, if you had a deep projected sound, then it would cut through the static that was crashing away in the background. So I guess that's where it all came from. But for me, here's who I patterned my voice after. A tip that nobody knows about me. I patterned off to two people. One was a guy by the name of Jim O'Brien from Waco, Texas, who came to Philadelphia to be the afternoon DJ at WFIL, a famous radio station in its time on the East Coast. And he was also the weatherman on WPVI, which at the time was WFIL-TV. And he had this folksy Texas accent, just a little bit. Not a lot, but just enough to give it a little, you know, good old boy sound.
Can you do him?
Yes, I can. Now, he's passed on, so, you know, I want to apologize to him in advance. But as is Joe O'Brien, WFIL 825. Good morning. This is El My Chrome Pony. Today on my way home, I'm going to hit the highway, or whatever. You know, that's the way he was.
Oh, nice.
And when he do the weather, he'd say, now, the big story in Action News today is that these weather bad guys are going to slip in from East Nacogdoches and dump their load on Philadelphia, thus making things all soggy and messy for the next 2 weeks. Back to you, Larry. That was Jim O'Brien.
So who was the other one?
The other one is, this is a stretch. There used to be a guy that would announce the toy products on TV from Mark's. Huh? There used to be a company called Mark's Toy Company, and it was always by Mark's. And it was this guy that spoke quickly and succinctly and very with a very clipped, careful voice. And so I don't even know his name, but it was the guy that did the voiceovers on the TV commercials for Mark's Brothers Toys. And that was my thing.
Okay, do him.
I don't remember the, you know, today from Wham-O, it's the Wham-O circular flying thing. But he was always very quick and clipped.
Okay, all right.
No, so maybe a little bit like Paul Harvey, because all my voices sound alike.
We've got your inspirations.
Okay.
Now, Mitch, give me your voice, your radio voice, in a nice, you know, announcement tone.
KDRT, Davis, California. That's my radio voice.
So that's like your normal voice, just sort of a little deeper and a little more projected.
Yeah, but my normal voice is my radio voice, so it's kind of worked out that way.
So what did your normal voice used to sound like?
I don't know. Before my voice changed, it was sort of a little bit like Mickey and Minnie, you know? That's where I have some claims to fame. I used to do the monorail voice at Disney World in
the what voice?
The monorail announcer. Please stand back as we come to the Contemporary Hotel. Stand, do not stand. Make your, you know, seats in the upright position, you know, whatever. So I did that for a while. That was fun.
But didn't they just record it once and have you, I mean, it's like you actually had to do that live all the time?
Oh, no. Yeah. I do that on buses and trucks and planes all the time. I read the exit and fire exit signs at the movie theater. The fire exits are clearly marked, you know, all that stuff. My sister used to walk out of the movie theater when I would do that.
Yeah, well, I can understand that, being a sister.
You know how it is. You torture your sister. That's what life is all about. So I had all these inspirations around me. I had all these people on radio stations around the world. I had certain people that I liked to emulate. And then I had to have an outlet for all of this. So my outlet was the local station I could see off in the distance with the five blinking red towers. So I talked my mom into driving me in circles until we finally came to where the station was. It was on top of a big hill they called Mount Cuba. And we drove up, and I knocked on the door, and the general manager came out, and I say, "Hey, I'm like really interested in radio," and of course the manager looks down upon me with a great concern and says, "Is that what you really want to do, son?" And I said, yeah, I really want to do it." And he said, "Well, you understand, you can't start on the air. You've got to do other things first." And I made my pitch for, "I'll be a gopher. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'll clean the trash cans out. I'll take the tape, all that stuff." You know, and that's how a lot of people started in radio. And what was unique about that, and what was thankful to the people at the radio station, was that I did every job in the building practically before I got a chance to get on the air. So it gives you a little bit of, makes you a little bit humble. It gives you an insight into what everybody around you has to do to get their job done. And it's not like falling off a log to become a radio announcer, because you have to work your way towards that. So I ended up getting a gopher job.
And it also means that when you get higher up, you know what is reasonable to request and what is difficult to impossible to request.
That what you just said is very wise. Unfortunately, I didn't apply wise to a lot of things that I did. I just did them and barreled through. And it made me popular with some people and very unpopular with others. But I think what it was is that I have a hard time recommending broadcasting as a radio DJ as a career to a lot of people, mainly because having a good radio voice is okay. That's a good thing to have. But it's not a prerequisite. Just because you have a good radio voice doesn't mean that you're going to be on the radio. There's so many other things that come into play. Mm-hmm. And for me back then, remember, this is before the internet. There was a place that was before the internet. And it was amazing that none of that stuff was around, and TV was somewhere else. for me, it was excuse me, a little frog in my voice. It was just something to work towards. It's something interesting. So lo and behold, I was in the right place at the right time, which was about 90% of it. Mm-hmm. And I got the job running tapes for the religious programs on the station on Sunday mornings. To me, that was the greatest job in the world, playing Powerline and Johnny Rivers and all those guys that did those shows on tape. And playing them. And I had this, I'd be in this giant control room with these big reel-to-reel decks and transcription turntables and playing all this stuff. And I felt so powerful. In fact, it got so bad that I called a friend of mine and I said, "Are you listening to Wham?" He's like, "Yes." Yeah. "Watch this." And I turned the volume down on the station, and then I turned back. I said, "Wasn't that funny?"
No.
The boss didn't like that, but I had the power. So I enjoyed doing that, and I did that for a long time. And then one day I came in to the station. "Tell me if I'm getting boring, okay? Just stop me and we'll move to something interesting." And they had fired most of the staff, and which was shocking because I got to know a lot of these people that worked there. It was my first lesson on the way the broadcasting industry works, is that it's a very transient business. If the ratings aren't good, you're only good as the last ratings book that came out. And back then it was Arbitron and Pulse that determined who was listening to what. So they had to clean house. And the only people that were left over were the program director, music director, and a couple of the jocks, and me. And we all had to do a six-hour shift 7 days a week. And to me, I would have paid them to have gotten that job. But that's how I really cut my teeth on being on the air. And I did the all-night show. And it was scary, but it was also fun. And I was using that alter ego, that other personality. So I wasn't really exposing myself. And the funny thing about it is I kept it a secret from the school and my classmates for a very long time, even to the point that as I got better and better at it and rose through the ranks at the radio station, they didn't know that I was the same guy. They just knew I was that.
So you were the dark man.
Yeah, I was Bobby Dark. That was my name. And
yeah.
I got that name because... Because
you did a dark show. You were overnight.
I was all night, and it was kind of a cool name. And Bobby was like back in the day of Bobby Sherman and mm-hmm. Bobby Rydell and all that. So that's how I got into it. And I did that for the longest time while I was going to school. And, of course, the school eventually found out. And to their credit, they gave me the freedom to be able to go and do what they called swing shifts. Even if I was having to go to class, I could get excused early and pop over to the radio station and do like the early night show or the afternoon or whatever. And it just sort of built and built and built into a little bit of a career. To this day, those times were the most fun I ever had in broadcasting, working at that first radio station.
Did you find that you were delayed in high school because you didn't get all your classes? Like, did you have to go extra or do summer work or anything?
In the summer, I worked on the air almost, quite a bit, so I didn't have extra work. And again, it was a private school. They let me have some leeway. I didn't have a specific curriculum that I had to follow. And the other thing was I was doing stuff at the school that was helpful to the school and also helpful to me from a learning thing. One of the things I did while I was still in high school is I said, hey, this school needs a radio station. And I applied for and got a FCC Class D FM broadcast station license. Broadcast at 10 watts. It was WZZE. And I built this station over my junior and senior years at the school. And that was, I guess, if you could call it a legacy, was what I left behind at the school. And thanks for what they did for me.
Is it still going?
Unfortunately not. They sold it off to somebody. And
they sold off the school?
They sold off the radio station. They decided that at one point down the road that it was too much of a impact on their trying to run it. So they didn't even bother to call the people. But anyhow, that's my beef.
They didn't call you and say you want it back?
No. To this day, I hold a grief over that one. So
yeah.
What are you going to do? So I had that. I had this job at the local top 40 radio station. It was playing the hits. We all looked. In the market, we all looked to WFIL in Philadelphia as the gold standard for broadcasting back then. In the 70s, WFIL was like the big king. If you went across the country, it would be WFIL, WABC, WLS, KHJ in Los Angeles. Those were some of the big top 40 stations. I know there's other stations out there, but they were the big most popular one, so I really, really wanted to work at WFIL because that was the epitome. So,
and you got to?
Well, we would send tapes out. They were called air checks. They were scoped versions of our shows, and we would constantly send them out all over the country to job openings that were posted. Mm. And I always got a nice rejection letter from Jay Cook, who was the program director at WFIL, and he always said, "We'll keep your tape on file." And we'll keep it for further future reference. And I was like, oh, boo-hoo, I'm just not good enough. I can't work at the big WFIO. So I ended up with a job in Texas at KONO back in 1974. In fact, after I graduated from high school, I was accepted at Syracuse University under most excellent Annenberg Communications School. And I had an epiphany driving back from there with my dad. I'd gotten in. The headmistress at the school that I was going to had written a fine letter, I don't know why, that I would be a good college student there, and they accepted me in spite of my grades, which were average. And my dad said to me, "Son, is this really what you want to do, go to college?" And I said, "Dad, isn't that what you're supposed to do? You go to high school, then you go to college, and you get your – yeah, it's just a process." And he said, "Well, you know, I didn't go to college, but that doesn't mean that that's the best thing. But it might be the best thing for you to just stay in radio and not go off into college and learn, you know, the theory of broadcasting, mm-hmm. and wait for your chance to get on the air." So I got some encouragement from my dad, and I decided, "Oh, I'm just going to stay in radio, and I'm not going to go to college." So that's when I sent out tapes, and I got a job at KONO. It's my first step out of the market. Mm-hmm. So here I am, a 17-year-old kid driving his little car with stuffed full of all of his worldly possessions, driving to San Antonio in the middle of nowhere. I didn't know anybody there, but that's what radio is all about. You know, it's so like working at a fire station. You know, it may be a strange place, but all, you know, they're all your brothers. And once you're in there, they all take you under their arm and, you know, treat you right. So it was my first step in learning that radio is a very transient business. You have to be able to move from place to place. So I was offered a job to do afternoons there, and I did it again as Bobby Dark. So it was kind of fun. And that was my first time away from home. So, you know, I went crazy. I went absolutely crazy. It was fun. My mom saw me a year later. She said, "What happened to my son?" I probably put on like 30 pounds and grew my hair real long and became a crazy person. So this is turning into a little of a bio of my radio career. I don't know if it's entertaining, how I got into it.
So, Mitch, I think you have a misconception of my show. This is not an entertainment show. This is a biography show.
Oh, it is. So I'm doing the right
It's
thing.
called That's Life. And so the title of this is going to be That's Life for Mitchell Hill. That'll be the name of the segment.
Oh, this is great. So I didn't screw it up already. All right, so give me some time. I'll get there.
You keep putting yourself down too much, sir. I want you to take better care of my friend and stop putting him down.
That's that dual personality that I have, Lois, is I have to keep one reined in while the other one goes out and goes too far. And you probably see that when we do our office hour show together. I get a little crazy, and then the guy that runs it, Alex Lindsay, has to rein me back in.
Well, it's just exuberance. That's what it appears to me to be, that you get so excited about the fact that you're going to be on the air again
Yeah.
that you just go, Besides which, there's all of us playing off each other. I mean, the jokes and the wordplay and it's incredible. And then I am sort of on the outside here because all you guys are getting all those quotes from movies that I never saw. I mean, I'm older than you are, but I just wasn't into the culture as much.
But you know what? You plant our feet back on the ground in the right place. We may get off topic or you go into a very heavily geeky thing, which you may not. You're very good, by the way, as far as geeky stuff goes, but you may go well beyond that. And the fact that your husband's a physicist, you said?
He was, yes, he's retired.
I was like, well, good for him. Physics hasn't changed, so he's still got the good information.
You want to say physics hasn't changed? You should see Jim. Now that he's retired, he gets to go and look at things. And so he went back to some of his old textbooks and things that he had. It was interesting, but he didn't delve into. And he'll reopen them and look at them and find out that the textbooks that he was using said, "This is impossible, and we'll do this instead." And then
Excellent.
Then 20 years later, the impossible is now the standard. And it's like, so yeah, physics changed a whole lot.
Because as a scientist, he understands that there has to be a proof, for everything, and eventually we figure it out. We'll probably figure everything out eventually. It's just a matter of time.
Well, I'm not sure we have that much time. Science fiction is the other story, you see.
I love science fiction. I love hard science fiction.
Yeah.
To me, that's educational in a sense because, the writers like David Brin, who are teachers of science in college or university, they teach you a little something about the universe while they're entertaining you with science fiction. So, and because of that, I was always a huge fan of Star Trek as a kid. That just fascinated the heck. Now, I know that's a guy thing.
No, it's not. You may think it's a guy thing, but that's because you're a guy.
I'm trying to be respectful to the ladies listening to let
The ladies listening, right? Okay. Oh.
they deserve some credit. So I have to rein myself back. I did this by the way, I did a great science fiction reference today and I got absolutely no laughs on it. Here's the problem with humor, by the way. This is a classic case. The question was an office hours was the person, I think it was Douglas Carmichael, asked the question, is it true that back in the 1970s there was a radio or TV station called The Seven, and it was built using old guitar amplifier parts? Is that possible? That was basically the question. And Alex came to me, as he does, and he says, "Mitchell," and I answered. I said, "There's only one way he could possibly do that with 1970s part. He'd have to get Mr. Spock to go to the what was it, the Guardian of Time, and go back in time to 1970 and get Edith Keeler to help him build the transmitter. But I don't think anybody else on this planet could do that." And Alex was completely nonplussed the whole time, and I thought, "That was a good one. Come on, give it to me."
That's a good one. Oh, okay. So actually, I would counter that,
Okay.
and my antidote would be all you have to do is ask a Time Lord.
Yeah, I am a Doctor Who fan, and it doesn't get any better than Tom Baker. But that's the 70s talking to me. Tom Baker played the part better than anybody. I love a good Time Lord. They're the best, aren't they?
They're good. I wasn't quite that nerdy at the time, and so I preferred a few of the other ones, but
But you know, like so many things, it wasn't a blockbuster show. Doctor Who was not a blockbuster show that was in Hollywood. It was just a show you stumbled on from the local public broadcasting station.
And then you kept listening to it again and again and again, and it went on for years. That's why they had so many different Doctor Who's.
They did a great job. The Tom Baker era. They used to take the half hour episodes and splice them all together into like a 2 hour arc show, and to me that was it was like a movie, like a full blown movie. So I loved watching him. He was great.
I'm more of a reader. I have been all my life, and so reading science fiction is something that I do all the time. I mean, whether it's science fiction or fantasy or one of the other genres, it doesn't really matter. I like to have a book, and now I like even better having an iPad because on the iPad I can make the font bigger. Books aren't printed in big print for everything that exists, but on the iPad it is.
I'm with you on that. I agree with you. I think reading, when you have that physical pulpy stuff, but I need the paper in my hand. I need to have it. Not a paperback, not one of those faux paperbacks. I mean a real solid book that you could turn the pages on, you could feel the printing, and you could almost feel the blood and the sweat from the the writer who wrote it.
And if it was big print, I would do that. But there's very few big
Just get
print.
bigger glasses, Lois.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Doesn't work that way for you.
Well, that's another thing we're going to, another new rule. No talking about medical conditions. No, age related is fine. Just not have you had your second cataract surgery or any of that stuff. No physical ailments.
I can't say I just literally had that done 2 weeks ago.
You can say that.
Okay, I just did.
I hope your experience is a good one and you heal up real well.
It's doing pretty well. Unfortunately, the glasses I'm wearing are 20-year-old glasses. They're the only ones that work right now. But that's a good sign because the ones that worked from 20 years ago, anyhow.
So one of the genres, I guess you'd say, that I really enjoy are the historical what ifs. You take the country in during the Civil War, and what if instead of winning this one, they lost that one? Or what if this guy died and that guy became president? Or what if, and you change one thing, and then you look at what history would have been like that way. They're fascinating, fascinating stories.
It is to a point, but I'm really sick and tired of writers using time travel as a crutch to solving their writing story.
Yeah, and that's a different thing. That what this is, I mean, the change in time, it isn't time travel, but the change in time is the story. It is the story.
I mean, like even the new Marvel movie with Doctor Strange, I think it's Doctor Strange 2, is that it's a multiverse. Now that they're going to, so it basically means they can go and rewrite the characters any way they want to, because in the multiverse there's an unlimited number of similar universes, but all maybe just a tiny bit off. So that's
And yeah, some of that gets old. I think my favorite of this is 1632.
and I know that from somewhere. Isn't that the year that Lincoln was shot?
1632? No.
See, that's why I failed history.
Yeah, 18 something would have been Lincoln.
Oh, okay.
This was, yeah, anyway. Yeah, so I turn you on to this. This is 1632, and there's a whole series of that change and yeah, it's a good book.
So somebody did one thing that ch changed all the subsequent years.
Actually, in this particular series, the thing that happened is a time travel thing. There was a anyway, this little piece of West Virginia got picked up and moved to Germany in the 1600s. So you have 19th century, 1900 people into the 1600s.
The reason I'm jumping up and down is I know the art of the author, and I can't remember his name right now.
Okay. There's a couple of people who are working in this world, this series. And when it came out, there was a fan club that got done really soon and started producing other writings by people in the new setting. And it was fascinating. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it as a there was another series of books that the artist who's stuck in my brain somewhere did, and he did the it'll jump out at probably halfway through the interview or the end. I'll just shout his name out at random. he did a whole series that it was a point. Something happened. Some freaky aliens out there. That's not him, but that's interesting. See, if I went downstairs right now and I pulled my library out and came up here, you would instantly think I was a genius because there's all my science fiction books. But anyhow, this thing was based on something happened near Maine that affected all devices and changed the laws of physics so that cars couldn't run, electricity wouldn't work, and that's how they took the story from there. It wasn't really a time travel, but they had to go back in order to get all this technology to work, mm-hmm. sort of reset the world and everything we know. But anyhow, it was very entertaining. He wrote like 8-10 books on that subject.
Do you know Kim Stanley Robinson?
Yes, very good. I love him.
He lives. He. I had him on my show. He lives in town.
Oh, really?
And so yeah, we got to do a show about that. But he has some interesting takes on, again, when technology is no more and people are having to deal without it. But really good books. Really good books.
Amy, for listening, you entertain me very well. Thank you very much. Because in my world of science fiction and hard science fiction, you're king. You're up there. Right with David Brin. What would he say?
Yeah, I like Brin too. Okay. So let's get back to my guest for the day is Mitchell Hill. He is joining us from the East Coast someplace. And you are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California. My name is Lois Richter, and this program is called That's Life.
Isn't that a great song?
What's That's Life? I don't know. I
That's Life. Yeah, it's a song.
I'm sure it's a song. I didn't know that. I don't pay attention to this stuff, man.
That's another problem that radio people have is if somebody says something that happens to be the lyrics or the title of a song, they'll blurt out the song and the title and the year. So,
well, you know, I have been restraining myself very well during this interview because you were talking about being a nerd and being a ham. And in my genealogy, I have an entire family called the Needhams. And I'm guessing that you have the Nerdhams.
Yeah, that would work. That fits well. But unfortunately, I am the only one. I'm the black sheep in our family. Nobody else carries the torch for technology. And
I think you're the pink sheep.
The pink sheep. That's very interesting.
Well, you're definitely not black. You look pink to me.
Oh, you mean the color.
Maybe that's just the video.
Maybe I'm just excited. I don't know. I mean, I could turn pink. For you, what the heck? I'll do that. Smile.
Okay, so back to Mitchell Hill.
Oh,
are you Mitch or are you Mitchell?
Well, that's another interesting story in itself. I'm Mitch to my friends and Mitchell to anybody that I'm conducting business with because it makes me sound more refined and serious. So please call me Mitch, but Mitchell will work.
Okay.
And then it gets even more confusing because my last name is Hill. And they say, well, what's your name? Mitch Hill. They say, Mitchell who? And then I go, Mitch Hill Hill. And they'll go, Mitchell Hill Hill. So it's a complicated process, but I have to do it at least once. So consider it done.
It's done.
Call me who you like.
Hey, Hill, how are you doing?
I'm here.
Are you retired?
I can't retire. I'm really bad with money, so it's a good start right there. I can't afford to retire. No, not really. I mean, here's a quick funny story, and it relates to the subject we're talking about. I went to a friend of mine who was running a group of radio stations in the area, and I went to him and said, you know, Pete, you know, I have a lot of time on my hands, and I think I'd be good back on the radio again. And he you know, got thoughtful for a second. He kind of leaned in and looked at me and said, you're too old. I was like, and that never occurred to me that I was too old. I think it's just an epiphany that you realize that maybe you're not. I always thought I could get back on the air again in retirement just to have something to do. But apparently my reference, cultural references and things that I do don't fit the style now.
Is that what he meant when he said too old? Or did he mean that we'd have to pay too much insurance for your health care?
No, he really meant it. I mean, I know him. And if he were listening, he would say, yep, I meant he was too old.
I know, but I mean, in what way too old?
I think that if you're on the air and your commentary and your vocal patterns and the things you talk about, as it's become obvious listening to me for the last half hour or so, that my reference points for cultural reference points and history are skewed lower than most demographics would allow. In other words, a millennial listening to this would not understand what some of the things.
Well, they wouldn't have stayed around this long.
No, they'd be gone.
Yeah.
Unless they were just curious about those things. They said, I'm going to tell you some things that I never told anybody.
And you've told me two of them already.
I know. And they say, maybe, hey, this guy might give something up and I won't have to clickbait him on the internet to learn what his birthday is or what his favorite dog is.
So
I'm just going to spit it out right here.
One of the things to do is to have a market for your show where the demographics are us.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, here's the list.
I think there's plenty of space there for that. There's a lot of us. I mean, I'm 72.
Oh my gosh, you're that old?
There's a lot of us. I told you I was older than you.
Good thing this is radio.
Why?
She looks like a 30-year-old babe. I'm telling you, folks.
Oh, thank you very much, Mitch.
She looks like a transplant hippie from the 60s. I'm telling you. Long hair, beautiful eyes.
He's stretching the truth there a little bit.
That's okay. That's what we do. I'm selling for you, Lois. I'm selling for you.
It's radio. You can talk about stuff and you can describe things in your imagination.
That's right. That's true. The question you asked about reference points, or at least how we got to it, for me was I had been in broadcasting. I eventually ended up getting a job at WFIL in Philadelphia, which to me was the cream of the crop. I sent tapes from San Antonio, Texas, everywhere, hoping to get a job someplace. And then I got a job at a station called WPEN in Philadelphia, owned by a company called Greater Media. And they wouldn't tell me what the format was, but they were bringing me back to Philadelphia. So I said, wow, this is cool. I'm coming back to my hometown. I'll be right across the street from WFIL. But they wouldn't tell me what the format was. So I came all the way back east, got the job at WPEN doing afternoon drive. It's a major market and a major market air shift. And I learned that it was oldies. But I'm talking about real oldies. Like Walter Brennan and Old Man River and Pat Boone. And
you were in your 20s at that point, weren't you?
I was just 19 at that point. It was a year later. So
how did you do with that, Mitch? Were you able to do it?
It was horrible. I got really negative and manic on the air, kind of dissing the music we were playing. And
oh, no.
Talking crap on the air. And the more I did it, the more they liked it. They thought it was hilarious. Management.
Well, they may have thought it was hilarious, but did their listeners like it?
I don't know. At that point, we had no listeners because we were a new station on the air. So that was it. And finally, I told my my boss, Julian Breen, I said, Julian, if I have to play Walter Brennan, Old Man River one more time, I'm out of here. And he just sort of laughed. Oh, that's funny. You're a funny guy. And it came up on the show. And after it was over, I said, I need to talk to you. And he said, okay, what's up? I really think I'm going to head out. I can't take this this music anymore. It's driving me crazy. I have no reference points to it. I'm not into doo-wop music. I was a 60s baby, so I liked the 60s music. You know, to me, Mamas and the Papas, that's a bit of a stretch, but Steppenwolf and Vanilla Fudge and the Troggs and the Beatles, you know, that was my era. So, he said, by the way, we need you to sign this non-compete agreement. This is something new at the time. And basically, you would sign your life away to the radio station you were working for, and you would promise never to work in another radio station that was in a competing market.
You had to leave, man.
So I said, I can't sign that. He said, well, you're going to have to go. And I said, guess what? I quit.
Yeah. Well, you'd already told him that you were leaving.
Well, I kind of sort of wanted to see if they'd offer me more money or something. I don't know. But
Or maybe a different music.
I don't think they were going to change the format just because I wanted it. It didn't work that way back then. So I went out and I had nothing to do. I was like, here I am. I just quit a major market job in one of the fourth largest market at the time. And I ended up going back to my high school, checking up on a radio station I had built. And I
WZZE.
spent time with students there and mentored them and, you know, brought the radio station up. And meanwhile, a friend of mine, whose name is Ray Quinn, said, hey, you know, want to come back to WHAMS, which was my first radio station. He was a friend of mine. We worked together, and now he was the program director. And I said, yeah, okay, what the heck, I'll do that. So for a summer, I worked back at WHAMS, and it was probably the best time of my life on the air because I was working with friends. I was working with people that I respected in the industry. You know, there were no conditions and stuff. It was just fun radio. That's what I enjoyed. And then all of a sudden, I get this phone call. It's Jay Cook from WFIL. He said,
He kept that tape. He kept that tape.
not only did he keep the tape, but he drove into the market at the local shopping mall and sat in his car with his wife and listened to me do my whole afternoon skick on the stick on the radio. And he said, what do you think about coming to WF? And he didn't even get the call letters out of his mouth. I said, yep, no problem. I'm there. So that's how I got the job. And the next moment, I'm sitting in Philadelphia on Bala Cynwyd Drive, City Line Avenue. City Line Avenue, that's where they were. They were like 100 City Line Avenue. And big radio station, top job that you could possibly have. Across from an engineer, because at the station at the time, we had people that actually pushed all the buttons and ran things, and all you had to do was concentrate on your craft. And it was nirvana for me. It was a moment of zen that just extended out through time and space, and I had achieved everything I wanted to achieve. So for me, that was life. That was for me. I mean, I reached the epitome of everything that I ever wanted.
How long did you stay there?
I wanted to stay longer, but I only got to stay there for 2 years. And they were changing their format because at the time AM was being eroded by FM listeners, and they had to change their format to more of an adult contemporary format. And
You mean you had to play Walter Brennan again?
no, thank God, I've never played Walter. And with all due respect to Walter, he's a wonderful actor, a lousy singer, and I loved his act. But no. I just got called into the office one day and they said, well, you don't really fit our format anymore. We're changing. And I said, you're firing me from the best job I ever had? And they said, yeah, you gotta go. So I was faced with the decision.
Where'd you go?
Luckily, I was able to, you know, be close to my parents. So I moved back in for a little while. And I said, what is the point of being in a business that you're only as good as the last radio show you did? And when you've reached the pinnacle, for at least in my mind, it was the pinnacle at WFIL. Where do you go from here? I just decided that right then and there, I was done with radio, and that I would go into something else, another kind of business. And I said goodbye to it, and I didn't really look back until a few years later. But that's for the rest of the story.
Well, that's your radio production time.
Yes.
Did you get totally out of radio then, or did you shift into the back of the scenes? What did you do next? What's the rest of the story?
I opened a studio, and my job was producing radio commercials and corporate videos and things like that. And that's how I got into the business that supports me to this day. And I did really well at it. It was good. I mean, it was a natural move for me. I had a lot of breaks that came along, and it wasn't all about the talent that I had. It was about being in the right place at the right time with the right people, and there was nothing else like it in the area, at least in town. And it was called Coast Communications. I guess I had a coast on my head, and I did well, and I did that for about 10, 12 years, and then moved in, all into I went all in on video production from audio, and made that transition from being the audio guy to the video guy, which is a really tough thing to do because people want to perceive you one way. People like to pigeonhole you in one thing, that radio guy or that audio guy. Now he's the video guy. You know, people just don't, you know, they don't like that.
Mention something that I really want to know. How do I get into that? Voiceover?
I'll tell you what I tell anybody else that asks the same question. I have a lot of friends that, because they have a deep voice or a nice voice like you do, they say they're going to be, they want to get into voiceover. And I say the same thing to them that I'll say to you, or the other way around, that it's good that you have a good voice because that's a prerequisite to be considered, but you have to do it over and over and over and practice and practice and practice. And then you have to be in the right place at the right time. Being good and sounding good is a prerequisite to being considered to do something. So to get into it, you have to start somewhere. So start offering your voice to, you could start out doing non-commercial stuff. You already do it by virtue of being on the air. So that's a good start. And then nowadays, there's a lot of companies on the internet. I won't mention them because that would be a little bit of a sales pitch that provide voiceover people. They sort of put them all together and then they give you a list. And that's what I do right now. I'm one of the people on a list of voices. And if you like that style, then you click it. And they take you to all the technical mumbo jumbo behind the scenes. And I'll be sitting around doing nothing, watching TV with my dog, and I'll get a text message. Oh, you got a voice voiceover waiting for you. So I'll run over and I'll read it. It'll be like this week I did a bunch of TV commercials or TV, what they call liners, for Chicago TV for the baseball season. And I didn't expect to get that. And then at the next minute, I'm doing commercials for Mack Hike Chevrolet in Houston or Dallas, something like that. For some reason, Lois, I don't know why, I get all these spots. Here is a 67-year-old guy that does a very calm voiceover demo. And then all the people I'm getting requests from are, they want car dealer spots where I'm going, this week only get 20, Toyota 25, 25. And I'm like, did they realize this poor old guy is screaming through all these commercials? When he's done, he's pushing the veins back into his neck and he's sitting there panting. And it's like, oh, oh boy, I'll tell you.
But they liked your sound,
man. Yeah, the young that's sound, I guess, like. Is what it was. Or it cuts through. And I found out that's what the car dealerships like. They like the voice that cuts through. So I do that during the day, and I do that at night, and then during the day, I'm the guy you see standing in front of the car dealership with the arms swinging back and forth.
No, you're the guy I see sitting on after hours chatting with everybody.
Oh, you caught me out. Okay.
Yeah.
So, the voiceover stuff, you can get into it at any level. Audiobooks for the blind,
Oh,
I think
that's a good
Bill
idea.
Davis, who's on our group, said he did a lot of those, and it taught him a lot of things, so... that's a good place. So it doesn't all have to be for free, but you got to sort of establish your turf.
You are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California.